Welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. This is the place where we help committed couples who want to level up their marriage experience newfound clarity, hope, and confidence. We're Matthew and Kim, co-hosts and husband and wife.
In 26 years together, we've seen a lot and never thought it could be as good as it is right now. We're here to help you successfully navigate the messy, dirty, and wonderful world of marriage.
We believe all couples deserve and are capable of experiencing an extraordinary and fulfilling marriage. And each week, we're bringing you life lessons from real-life successful couples to help you grow and strengthen your relationship.
We'll get started right after this message. If you want to learn how to experience the best, most fulfilling year of your marriage, we invite you to order Matthew's new book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. You can get it at Amazon.com or visit Matthew's website, www.matthewphoffman.com. Again, that's Amazon.com or www.matthewphoffman.com. And now back to the show.
Today we are speaking to Scott and Erica Savor. Scott is a leadership consultant and professional speaker for individuals, teams, and companies. He specializes in the subjects of leadership, motivation, and mental training. Scott is also a successful author of Uncommon Competitor, One Day Contracts. His wife, Erica, is a physical therapist, specializing in treating athletes who participate in sports that require overhead motions. She has a passion for health, fitness, and teaching others, and of course, raising their 14-year-old son. Scott and Erica specialize in creating systems that work and keep their relationship thriving. They even make asking your partner to do chores fun and exciting. These two are experts in the importance of core values and gratitude and are here to share the games, exercises, and key tactics they use to make their relationship undoubtedly kick ass. Keep listening to learn some of the things you can implement today to improve your relationship right now. And we are excited to have Scott and Erica Savor joining us on this interview tonight. So we start off all of our interviews with the same question, and either of you all can go first on this, but we do want to hear from both of you. But we'd want to know, what do you guys think makes you a kick-ass couple?
Awesome. You want to go first?
Go ahead.
For me, it's very simple. Again, let me put a disclaimer out first. We're not perfect at anything. We'll never bat 1,000 relationship-wise. We don't even know what perfection is. We don't walk on water. We don't wear sandals. We try to really prioritize our behaviors and our commitment to our relationship. So that's kind of our first disclaimer, please. But to answer your question, really appreciate it. It's our core value system. It's written, printed out, publicly announced core values. And I really believe, and I know Erica does too, that that's a really, really big deal for us.
Wow, great answer.
Do you have anything to add to that, Erica?
Well, I was just gonna say that what we did with the core values, we made them something that we can commit to, that are easily controllable by ourselves, and then it's super clear, really easily to understand.
I'm curious, are they written? Are they just understood? I'd love for our listeners to hear what your secret is.
Nice.
Smoke and mirrors. Yeah, we took it off the wall for you guys. We're trying to give you as much visual as possible.
Today, did I? Well, I tell you what, we'd love, will you guys share, you don't have to go through all of them, but just talk to us about that process. Like, how did, when you said you were going to do this, how did you end up with what you have in that frame on the wall?
Sure. Thank you for asking. So, I get to work with a lot of individuals, teams, and companies on culture creation, right? I've been fortunate to do this for maybe like the last 12 to 15 years. And it just made so much sense. And we talked it up, you know, we chopped it up about it. Hey, what can we do? Is there anything that makes sense from a value perspective that we're willing to put on paper? And we came to the conclusion that it would be really good to have questions. A lot of people have just a name and a definition, a value and a definition, whether it's at their house maybe or at a company for a core value system. But we've really found some really serious power in the questions. And so we have 25 questions listed out that are 100% controllable, daily disciplines, behaviors, things like that. So,
wow, that's awesome.
Beautiful.
I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about that as the podcast goes on. I'm sure that'll weave into our discussions. But
What I'd like to do is just go back a little bit. And what I mean by that is I'd love to ask you both about your families of origin. I really truly believe that we are a product of the people who raised us. Sometimes that's a great experience, and sometimes it's not. Sadly, it could be traumatic or very unpleasant experience. So I'll start with you, Erica. Tell me a little bit about what love looked like in your household when you were growing up.
Yeah, so my parents have been together for, it'll be 55 years in September. So I'm the youngest of three. And I kind of experienced my parents a little bit different than my two siblings because they fought all the time. They were 16 months apart. I was 6 years younger than my brother. So my parents were much more chill by the time I kind of came into remembering a lot of those types of things. And as far as like what love looked like, I think it was really just the give and take of the relationship and being able to collaborate, definitely not be always on the same page. I kind of tend to follow my mom sometimes. She was a middle child, very agreeable. You know, my dad can be kind of hard-nosed sometimes too, but I also value that system in him and see that, you know, he's a very determined person, kind of like this guy over here. So I think that's how I was attracted to that as well. But, you know, we went to church every week. It was something that, like, there were these disciplines that even though they didn't spell them out for us, it was something that, you know, you always felt. And it's been something that I've grown up with and really appreciate about my family still.
That's great. And I'm curious, what did communication look like between your mom and your dad?
I have to say they're much better now. He was a coach and a teacher, and so he wasn't home a ton. And when he was, if there wasn't something that was sort of, you know, dinner's at six and I'm going to relax after that. And, you know, not to throw them under the bus, but there was times where he would roar and scream and say his piece and then, you know, slam the door and leave if he didn't like what she had to say or do. So I struggled in relationships myself, being able to stand up for what I believe some of the time. And that's where I think we've had issues, but also it's been something that I've really grown to be my own independent person in this relationship and why I value him so much.
Awesome.
That's true.
Smoke and mirrors. Don't get caught in a fog, you guys.
We're staying focused.
That's right. All right. So I'm going to ask you the same question, Eric. Tell me a little bit about, or Scott, I apologize. Tell me a little bit about your family of origin and what love looked like in your family when you were growing up.
Yeah, no, phenomenal question. So we are what we've been around, right? We're a product of our environment, just like you said. So mom and dad, again, have been married forever on my side of the coin, but it was more of like a baby boomer type relationship where the father kind of ran the household, the spouse, you know, the husband ran the household, and then mom kind of followed the lead and maybe was agreeable in a lot of circumstances. And they've kind of evolved over time, right? Where, hey, no, you can also do the dishes. Hey, you can also cook some meals. You can do those type of things. But my mom was very giving, huge heart, things like that. And I believe that was poured into me. And my dad had the opposite packaging where it was like, hey, discipline, do your work, hard work, all those fun things. So I think they complemented each other really well. And it was just fun to, I guess, learn the lessons throughout as they raise us. So I feel like I won the family lottery. They were amazing. So, yeah. Yeah.
I actually think that our parents, ironically, the couples are very similar.
Sure. Ah.
Between our mom, they live 10 miles apart. They're actually really good friends, too.
That's neat to hear, because I would say most of the people that we interview, it's very different. You know, their families of origins are complete opposites in many cases. I'm curious, Scott, is there anything that you brought to the marriage that you would have said, oh, I'm definitely going to do this, or I'm not going to do that, from the way you were shown and what was modeled for you in your household growing up?
Phenomenal. So a little backstory, if I could share some context, please. My dad grew up a majority of his life without his original dad because he was accidentally killed in a hunting accident when he was little, respectfully. And so my dad inherited, you know, a stepdad, which, you know, had some challenges respectfully growing up and things. And he wasn't very physical. He wasn't very verbal on, hey, I love you, give me a hug before you go. It wasn't that exchange. So I never got that. It wasn't bad. It's just my dad couldn't give what he didn't have, respectfully, right? Just like any of us. So I didn't tell really anyone that I dated up in my whole life that I ever loved them. And I didn't have that, you know, that physical component, maybe that was necessary, that I believe is important in our relationship. So I try to make that a priority. And, you know, we've been dating for how many years did we date before we actually got married?
Five
at least. So, yeah. So I try to make that a priority, demonstrating the physical hugging, things like that. We actually have a rule in our house called the Tony Dungy rule that we really believe in that allows us to stay accountable to that and celebrate that important piece of the puzzle. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, you got it. Good stuff. And so it's interesting because a lot of couples fail to go back and talk about what they experienced and what they had. And your relationship is a combination of that, whether you know it or not. And so you guys did a great job of publishing those values. So you know what has to be done, the questions you have to be asking yourself every day as you guys go forward and have this hybrid of what you each experienced in life. And what we want to do now is kind of, we have 13 pillars that we talk about a lot. We sent those to you guys. And we think the first three, there they are.
Yeah, let's go. Thank you.
Yeah, baby, here we go. Buckle up. So the first of those, we have the three C's. And we think the three C's are kind of the foundation of relationships. And the first C being commitment, the next being communication, and the third being conflict resolution. So, Scott, I'd love to talk to you and hear you say first, maybe, what does commitment mean to you in your relationship with your bride?
Phenomenal. Thanks for asking. So, again, it's always an evolution, right? So wisdom begins with the definition of terms. And we think that's a really big deal, right? So if we define commitment, it could be not worrying about the other person's feelings. If this is our desired outcome or behavior, let's stay locked into this. It's not about hurting your feelings or I'm right or you're right. It's not me versus you. It's, hey, we've agreed to this component of commitment inside of our relationship. So I think first and foremost, and Erica, echo anything that you have too, please, but it's defining what exactly commitment is, what it isn't, and then understanding that there's no hierarchy either. Like, I don't get a free pass ever. She doesn't get a free pass. And we hopefully echo that onto our 14-year-old also. And I don't think people define things enough. And if you give me a third choice on what the definition of commitment is or what that looks like, I'll probably take the third choice. So it's kind of like an absolute where it's our way or no way once we kind of align on that. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys have kind of come to agreement on what commitment is and how you're going to act on it. And what I loved, Scott, what I think I heard you say is commitment in your relationship, it's a win for us, not for you. Not for just her,
right.
But together. So your decisions are measured by that ruler. Hey, if it's a win for us, sorry you may not like it, but we agreed to the principle and we're going to stick to the principle because it benefits us, a win for us. And I love that because, you know, there's me and you, but when you get married, there's no more me and you, it's us. And we love to use that barometer as well. So I really love to hear that you guys are committed to us and working. Not always easy, right? Because our personalities get in the way and our feelings might get hurt. But I love the fact that you guys have established that in your relationship.
We listened to a therapist one time who said there are actually three people in the relationship, right? It's we, me, and you. So there's three of us. But the we is the third person, right? Usually it's just you and me. The we is just as important.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. So it's nice to hear about commitment and how you guys define that. And what can you, either of you, give me an example of something that the other one does to show their commitment to your relationship?
You or me?
Go ahead. You can start.
Communication. We were just talking about this earlier, right? We wanted to be really intentional about, you know, communicating, right? So Erica was really good at, hey, no matter, she's flooded. She's a physical therapist, right? So if she's flooded with patients during the day, she'll always try to check in, right? Daily check-ins, daily huddles after work. Like, hey, what are the most important things? We call them MITs. Hey, what are some MITs that happened today? Get me up to speed. I'll get you up to speed so we can, you know, pull the cart in the same direction. Again, it requires intentional effort. It requires energy, all that fun stuff. So one would be, I think, getting in front of each other, no matter how busy we are, and saying, hey, no, we are going to own communication. And it might even get annoying sometimes, like, oh, okay, you got to tell me 17 times. We're already connected. But no, to try to over communicate and get in front of each other so we can connect, connect, relate, trust, and repeat at a higher level.
Yeah, I think that that's something that many couples fail to do, especially with the busyness of kids running around and jobs. And, you know, we're kind of at that era where our parents are getting a little bit older. And so, you know, we're the sandwich generation, right? Taking care of both kids and parents. And so I think it gets really easy to get caught up in the busyness of life. And that's where I think the commitment on our level together to say, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a day, you know, once, twice, whatever it is, but to stay committed to that and not try to say, oh, we'll do it tomorrow or we'll catch up this weekend or, you know, little things like that. I think a lot of times things get lost in the shuffle then.
Sure. Great example. I love that. Committed to communication and staying connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, communication is our second pillar, and it's huge. I mean, I think the way we communicate with each other and making time for communication is really key in our relationship. Can you tell me a little bit about how you communicate with each other?
Yes.
I think probably the one thing that I struggled with a little bit in the beginning, but I've realized is extremely important, is that I have to share with him, whether it's a sensitive truth or not, like what I believe is right, and not care how he responds. Because I used to be the person, like my mom, who would do whatever I needed to do to make him happy, or, you know, whatnot, and be agreeable to whatever they wanted to. It became something that I have to share, like, hey, we already committed to these, whether it's our core values or whatnot, but we said we were gonna do this, right? Because it's right for us, and then take it from there and share, you know, hey, I don't really like the way that you're doing that. I think that's important that I share that, and I have to be okay with him not liking that. And so regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, it sounds like you've really needed to learn how to open up. And to, yes. be vulnerable and say, this is how I'm feeling. This is what I need.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Because I felt a lot of times that it, you know, I like to be the person that can be flexible and can be a team player. And, you know, hey, it's okay if it's not, you know, my favorite thing, or like whatever restaurant we choose to go to or whatnot, you know, rather than taking 20 minutes to decide, hey, it doesn't really matter where we go. I'll be happy wherever. And that was kind of the message, where it's like, well, no, I really actually do want to go here instead. So it was opening up and being okay with that.
Yeah. We have needs, right? And we need to be able to express what those are so that the other person can understand us better.
You mean you can't read Scott's mind?
Only 3 days a week.
Yeah, he is kind of an open book sometimes. He doesn't like to keep things hidden, that's for sure.
Scott, do you have anything to add to the communication between you and your wife?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. We really believe in freedom. That's the goal, right?
Yeah.
When you can walk into a room and you're not worried about what someone thinks, does, responds, reacts in a positive or negative way. I think everybody in the world's striving for that. And there's a system, and I think there's a handful of non-negotiables that help us to do that. And again, we're not perfect, we don't walk on water, but there's not a better feeling in the world as a couple when you can be free and share exactly how you feel. And hopefully we do a good job demonstrating that and normalizing that, when a lot of people would say, oh, we don't want to do this because it might create this conflict. No, we want to normalize that at a point where it's just, there's no surprises. Like, oh, I can't believe you said that to me. Well, no, like, we're okay with that. And every time we have a safe conversation, we reinforce more fear. So let's be aware and allergic to those things to the best of our ability.
Yeah, I love that, because I also feel it creates so much more trust when you're able to do that.
Well, and it helps us be more confident in other relationships outside of us too.
Sure. Great map. And that's important, that communication leads kind of naturally into conflict resolution, right? Because there's going to be conflicts. There's going to be where one of you thinks one thing and somebody thinks something else. So what have you done, Erica, in your relationship? How do you guys resolve conflict? How do you handle those things when maybe you're not seeing eye to eye?
Yeah, great question. I think I had to be okay with not, I like to have, I'm, you know, very academic. I want to put a bow on it, make sure that the last 3 hours we spent was worth something. And in order to be worth something, we had to have a resolution. We had to have, put a bow on it, make sure that we accomplished something. And we had to come to the point where No. The resolution is the fact that we may disagree and that's okay. But the problem isn't so much of, you know, all the things that we led, you know, all the things we talked to and all the things we're unpacking, but what did we end up at? It was just having the conversation, right? That was the progress. So it wasn't so much that we had to have this final resolution to then, okay, now this is exactly what we're going to do. And sometimes we come to that and sometimes we don't. But I always, the thing I struggled with a lot in the relationship was making sure that I was, you know, getting a bow on the end of this conversation so that now I know what to do, right? And sometimes it's the best part is just not knowing and continuing to dig deeper and communicate and figure out why.
So what I hear you saying is that for you to feel like it was done and you did something, there had to be a resolution. Like, we got to arrive at the station, baby. And
totally.
If we don't come into that station, we
yes.
didn't. What do we do? Oh, my gosh.
I didn't get my box checked. Yes.
Right. So instead of being achievement oriented, we got to get something done. You said the
right.
process is important. And where is it taking us in that process? So
correct.
You were able to yes, trim the sails and adjust. That's a beautiful example. I love that. How about you, Scott? What does conflict, anything different for you on the conflict resolution side?
Yeah, no, it's okay to disagree. Like, sensitivity equals poverty. That's something we really believe in. Now, again, we're not perfect at it, but we're big on the prerequisites that lead to the desired outcomes, right? So let's just lock in on all of these things that might put the odds in our favor of being better communicators or more committed and doing all these things that we can control 100%. And let's keep those outcomes where they need to be. And if they happen, great. If they don't, good. Well, maybe we get another day tomorrow to go after them, right? So it's not popular. You guys know that. That's not popular because the feelings are over here usually, right? And we don't want anything to do with that. And we'll kind of joke and give each other a hard time and play weird games throughout the day. And we know we're aliens and we don't care, but it's like Mark Twain said, it's more important to be curious and be popular. And we really believe in that in a lot of aspects of life.
Tell me, I want to hear more about that. So tell me, what's an example of one of those funny games? How are you an alien or weird? Because I don't see any antennae.
Right?
I don't see any funky warts or double noses. So I want to understand that better.
Appreciate it. You want to go with me?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, so we do all kinds of weird stuff. We believe in demonstrating a high level of awareness, right? We can't have a presence at work around each other at a high level unless we're prioritizing being present and holding each other accountable. And we believe there's two ways we can do that. One is rewarding the positive addiction. So like when someone's present on a high level, like, hey, thank you so much for being where your feet are. Thanks for putting your phone away. Thanks for never having your phone ringer on ever. Like that allows us to practice being present so that we can have more of a presence, right? That would be one form of accountability. Another form of accountability to that piece, thanks for listening, would be we do a weird game called Got Your Back. Do you want to go ahead, please? Be ready. You asked for it.
Oh, yeah. Get on.
So basically, if we tag or get our back on, and it's anybody in the house, so it's myself, Scott, and our son, and being able to recognize that they left a light on, left the toilet seat up, you know, spilled crumbs over something like that. So then we get to designate one of our responsibilities that day, mowing the lawn, doing the laundry, cleaning the swim spa, whatever it is, to them. If we end up at the end of the day where we have more on them than they have on us. So it's a way to kind of take down, like, it's not us telling him what he has to do, but he gets to get our backs as well. So it's a fun game.
Nobody's safe.
Yeah.
Nobody's I like
safe.
That.
I do too.
It's competitive,
gotcha.
You guys do for real.
I think this game is going to get real in the Hoffman house as well. Got your back.
And it's fun now because Grant, our son, has friends that will come over and then they'll say, oh, you're going to get your back. And so it's we have a good time with it.
That's awesome. I guarantee you our listeners are going to say, I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to take that on.
good game. Thanks for sharing that. I love that.
So we have 13 pillars. We talked about the first three as being really the most important, but I'm curious, and I'll ask you, Scott, first. Of the 13, is there another one that really resonates with you, that stands out to you, that's really important to you?
Awesome. I got your sheet again. Thank you so much. We drink your Kool-Aid out of a cement truck on these things. These are a big deal. Hopefully we demonstrate those at a high level that's worth reproducing. So the first one that jumps out to me is faith. So the definition of faith could be framed up as believing in something or someone in the absence of proof, right? You guys know this. And it's a really, really big deal. So when she walks around, when I walk around, it's a really big deal that we believe in ourselves, right? We can't get the best out of each other. We can't collaborate at a high level and give whatever we give to the world unless we first believe in ourselves. And we might use an example. We call it FLY, first love yourself. And the world doesn't really support that at a high level, but we believe it's a big deal, right? She maxes her stuff out. I max my stuff out. We meet in the middle, right? We unlock some pretty fun things. Anyways, but faith is a big deal for us. And that's the first thing that jumped out on the page for me.
Awesome. How about you, Erica? What jumps out at you? Is there one that you really resonate with?
Yeah, I mean, they're all great. I think that one of the things that I care a ton about is appreciation. So when you think about gratitude and expressing joy, it is one thing that we do in our family. We all have a gratitude journal. We all make time for it every single morning. I think it's important to not wait for happiness or other things outside ourselves to create that, but rather to, or to chase it, but rather to express joy and be appreciative. And I think that's the, and we actually, at the end of the day, kind of back to one of the things he was talking about, we share one or two things about each person in the household when we're saying goodnight to Grant before prayers that, you know, we talk about, hey, you know what, I really appreciate when you did this or this or this. And, you know, I do one for Scott and for Grant, and Grant does one for Scott and myself, and then Scott does one for myself and Grant as well. So it's just kind of a fun way to put a bow on the end of the day.
I love that, because going to bed with gratitude or ending the day with gratitude, you know, there's no room for anger or disappointment, or when there's gratitude, that's all there is. It's goodness.
Yeah, somebody, I don't know who said this, but they said you can't be fearful or full of anxiety, anger, and be grateful at the same time.
So yeah, if you just Tony Robbins.
Yeah, Tony. So if you just practice on being grateful, it really displaces and fills up the bucket with that goodness. And I love the practice. I drink that Kool-Aid. I have a gratitude journal, and I write 10 things I'm grateful for every day, and 3 people I'm sending love out to. And it's a huge practice, and it's blessed me. It gets me in that right framework so that when I do see my wife, my kids, my coworkers, my family, then I'm coming at it from abundance and gratitude and not anger, disdain. Oh, it's raining, and oh my gosh, the clothes are dirty and the sink is full of dishes from last, right? You know, you can get distracted on the wrong stuff. So thank you for sharing that example. I think it's something that will really resonate with our listeners as well. And it kind of is funny, it leads into another thing that Kim and I talk about. I didn't coin this phrase, but I'd like to say I did. It's the concept of spillover thinking. So one thing that I try to do for my bride and that she does for me is we try to pour so much into each other, so much goodness, so much love, so much gratitude that she can't contain it. And if she can't contain it, it's going to spill over to everybody she meets and everywhere she goes. So what I'd love to know from you guys is, how does the goodness of your relationship spill over into other areas of your lives? Where do you see the goodness from your relationship impacting, influencing others?
Yeah, I think it really starts with that ability to express joy versus needing him to make me happy. You know, I think there was some kind of interview that we listened to Jada Pinkett Smith at one point, and she was talking, you know, it's kind of the old analogy of putting on the oxygen mask yourself first, and then putting it on somebody else. Like, you have to be the best version of you so that you can be the best version for them. So I think that when we express that joy ourselves and fill others' cups up, it allows them, because they're joyful as well, to do just that, right? It spills over into other people, and we can really influence and have a dynamic presence around people that we're with.
Sure thing. Good, good. How about you, Scott? How do you see the goodness of your relationship spilling over into other areas of your life?
Yeah, so momentum solves 90% of our problems, right? And you guys know that. So once you kind of commit to your responsibility of influence, I think it gets every day gets a little bit more interesting, right? When you're like, well, what I really do matters, what we really do matters, and what we don't do really matters. And as long as we can take responsibility for that and kind of celebrate it, you just avalanche and snowball into some really, really fun things. But that's the trick, though, is what are the prerequisites that keep our radar up to be like, okay, no, I do matter. Or what I do when she's at work does matter. Or if I do send her a message at work, that does matter. and to not get caught up with all the noise of the world, for lack of better verbiage.
I have a question for both of you. And what I'm going to do is ask you to give yourself, your unmarried self, advice. So if you could go back before you were married, knowing what you know now, what piece of advice would you give your unmarried self? And either one of you can take it first, but you both have the same question.
I'm going to totally take this first.
Yeah, let's go.
Not to be so sensitive. I grew up, you know, in an environment where I was praised for a lot of the things that I did. And when I didn't do something well, I took it to heart and it was really hard on me. And I struggled to be okay with not, you know, not necessarily being perfect, but not doing everything right. And so I always searched for the right answer, searched for the right response, right? We struggled with those conversations and I would try to give a different response then to make sure that I was appeasing him or making him happy. I was just way too sensitive. And I think had I broken that barrier down earlier, I think that would have really helped us earlier in the relationship.
How about you, Scott?
Not trying to control as many things as I would like, right? If you got a type A personality or if you've learned something that other people don't know, she knows this. I mean, she messes with me every day about this. I gotta pump the brakes. I gotta understand that, hey, I can't control what she does. I can't control what our 14-year-old does. I can't control what other people do. And it's a constant reminder. You guys know this. It's a constant evolution. You never arrive ever. But that's been a big thing for me.
How do you do that? What do you say to yourself?
Yeah, great question. So I think it's like anything in life. The more you gain a better understanding and you learn, you become more free to, okay, here's what the realities are of things, right? So you got to be a sponge on steroids. You can't show up and be like, oh, I hope respectfully that everything will be better tomorrow and it'll be easy for me to do this. No, you got to put in practice. You got to get in the trenches and you need to learn. You need to study. You need to suck the brains dry of high performers who have been there before in great relationships and healthy, competitive, right, evolving type relationship situations. And I think that's a big part. I mean, again, preparation really isn't popular in 2021, in my opinion, but it is popular. And studying and researching what great relationships do and how they behave is a really, really big deal. And we need to make the unpopular popular.
Well, I think he's also done, I'm just going to respond for him for a second. I think he's also done a much better job not caring about the outcomes as much, right? And just caring about the process. So the fact that he wants to control the outcome, he has to, you know, let that go. And I think he's done a much better job of that lately.
Sure, and the process is where we learn. The process is important.
When it comes to creating a kick-ass marriage, do you ever wonder what you could be doing better? Have you ever thought how helpful it would be to be a part of a like-minded community of other imperfect couples who want to level up in their number one relationship? Come visit Kick-Ass Couples Nation, where you can talk with people just like you who are looking for ways to invest in and increase their joy, commitment, and fulfillment in their most important human relationship. You'll have access to a team of licensed marriage therapists, coaches, articles, podcasts, live webinars, and more. Just visit MatthewPHoffman.com so you can learn more about a community that's ready to help you level up. That's MatthewPHoffman.com so you can become of the growing kick-ass couples nation right now.
So I want to dig in a little bit because I love what you said about, you said I've got to dig in and be a sponge and suck the brains dry of anybody that's going to help. So both of you think about this for a second. Who and how? Who have you looked to? How have you looked to other people, other sources, other ideas? I think that my co-author of my book, Chris Cambis, he was one of the early interviews we did, and, you know, great relationship, right? But he's like, hey, I got the same darn issues. I go to therapy. I need help. I'm looking to other people. So one of the messages that we want to get across is you need help, and you got to look to people, whether it, you know, and I'm not going to fill in the blanks, but I'd love to hear from each of you guys who and how have you looked to, gone to, done to bring those things into your relationship and make it stronger?
Go ahead. So you know this, it's just like in any profession, in order to find out what's ahead of us, you got to study the people on the way back. And I think a lot of people make this mistake. I made the mistake early in relationships where I would study someone who's been married for 37 years. Great, that doesn't necessarily mean that, that might be a fact that they've had a relationship for 37 years, but it might not mean respectfully that that's something that we want to reproduce, right? So I don't necessarily believe that longevity is the primary factor that we should study. It could be a 5-year relationship and they, you know, they have some really, really unique peaks and valleys and they navigate the transitions differently than everyone else. Again, I don't necessarily believe that the outcome or longevity is something that you should study. So I'd kind of start with maybe what we don't study or what we're mindful of and we keep our radar up to versus just saying, oh, you've been married for 150 years. Yes, that's exactly what we're going to model, that behavior, and let's go. I think we always got to test our assumptions regardless of the outcome or the longevity.
Good idea. What would you add to that, Erica? Who or how do you look to bring some of that modeling or success or who or how have you learned from that things that have helped you in your relationship with Scott?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely know, everybody knows some people and how you want to not do what they're doing or you see something, right? It was always like when I would point out the kid in Target who was screaming and acting out to my son, like, this is not how you want to behave, right? But I think that there's certain situations where, whether it be things that we've learned from our parents, things that we've learned along the way, we both spend plenty of time learning while we're, you know, while he's shaving or I'm getting ready in the morning, different podcasts, lots of stuff on YouTube about, you know, relationships and communication. And I could list, you know, a litany of lots of names and people that we pay attention to. But I also think it's really important to get a vast array of people and not just only listen to this one. I mean, you might fall in love with, you know, somebody's podcast, for example, but I think it's really important to make sure that you're kind of getting a 360 view of, you know, what relationships look like and how to manage and navigate through all kinds of situations.
Sure. Yeah. You don't want to be monochrome. And I appreciate that. And Scott, I want to go back. You said something, you know, just because you're married for 150 years doesn't mean you're doing it right. Maybe you just learn to tolerate the crap.
I mean, man,
you're hanging out because it's easy.
The nuggets
right? Doesn't
mean
you're a master, right?
Today and that and, you're willing to be open with us for our listeners.
And, early on.
It's by exposing them to those broad views and all those different inputs that allow that.
They've got so much right. They have a strong friendship system that was developed before they got romantic with each other. And their respect and the way they work and see and love each other is incredible. And you know, I would factor that they probably have a lot more right than someone that could be married for 25 or 30 years who just never got it. And they're doing the right thing. So I appreciate, you know, time, longevity doesn't necessarily mean success. And I appreciate that you shared that in
sure.
the relationship. Thank you. So we are so, I mean, man, love the nuggets and what you guys have shared today and that you're willing to be open with us for our listeners. And it's by exposing them to those broad views and all those different inputs that allow them to sift and gather the pearls. And you've definitely given some of those pearls to us today.
I'd love to go back to your framed list of questions. Could you just share a few of those with our listeners?
100%, let's go.
Thank you.
So again, we're not right. This isn't the only way, but we really, really, really believe in this stuff, right? So you know magical things happen when you put pen to paper and say, hey, this is what we're gonna go after today. This is what we're gonna prioritize. This is what we're gonna be intentional about, right? So, and it's just like straight out of the Bible, right? Pride is one step away from a fall. So we gotta be mindful of what we, have reaped the benefits of and are proud of, right? So we're really proud of this. Again, we're not perfect. We don't walk on water, but we really believe in these. So like one item on our core value questions list would be, did we write down what we were grateful for today, right? The greater your awareness, the greater your power. That's a really, really big deal. The best thing we've learned about gratitude arguably might be is that it keeps you really, really present. If we can access gratitude faster in our relationship, we're probably going to be more present and then a lot of fun things really happen. I don't think a lot of people talk about gratitude like that. With me?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, if I keep sharing, did we write down our goals and responsibilities, right? We're 43% more effective if we write down the things that aren't on autopilot, that aren't habitual. So then that frees us up more from a relationship perspective. She doesn't have to remind me. We don't have to create that stress and pile things on top of each other because I have stuff written down. She has stuff written down. That's a really big deal. It's 100% controllable. It's not really popular in the world, though. And I think that's a prerequisite to create bandwidth so we can have time for different conversations and other things, because we're maybe organized differently inside of that request, that core value question. Thoughts so far, please.
Oh, love it. Yeah. Love it. Two good things that I believe in and strive to do.
Well, and I hear it as being really accountability. Which, you know, at the end of the day, when you're going through that list of questions, I mean, did I do these things? Did I show up today? I love it.
Good stuff.
No, it's really fun. It's kind of like scoring a video game or scoring like a basketball game. And it's like, oh, you know, we'll never go 25 for 25 probably. But if I go 12 for 25 on this question list on our value system, some good things are probably going to really happen. It's going to create some serious momentum.
Mm-hmm. And we're all always going to fall short. Like you said, we're not perfect. But I love that you have 25 things that you strive to do on a regular basis.
Powerful.
And could I share something too, please?
Please.
Let me be really clear. Like, what you guys put on here is a really, really big deal. We literally have all of these on this in our house. Like, literally, if you went through every single one of your pillars, they're really, really big deals. Could I share another example, please, that we really believe in?
Love it.
Love to hear it.
So today, did we hug at hellos and goodbyes, right? We call this the Tony Dungy rule. Do you want to echo that a little bit maybe and break that down?
Yeah. So Tony Dungy was known to, you know, be a big faith guy, right? And he struggled saying goodbye to people when he left. And so the day that his son committed suicide, his biggest regret was that he didn't hug him before he left that day. So, you know, we have a picture of Tony Dungy on our door when we walk in. We also have a picture of Grant and I on a roller coaster when he's five, his first ever roller coaster, and hair's sticking up and he's like screaming at the top of his lungs. But that's to keep the negativity out, right? So we hit that when we walk in because it just sets the tone for what we're going to do once we enter the boundary of the house. And then, you know, we walk to whoever's, or come back to the house, sorry. And yeah, and we can also get each other's back on that if we don't do it.
Love it.
Nice. Good stuff. So grateful you shared that with us. And maybe I can talk you into sharing the whole list with us so we can understand some of that concrete and more to this and that good foundation you have.
It's all smoke and mirrors. Don't get caught in the fog, you guys.
Well, we appreciate your authenticity and sharing from the heart and what you guys are doing it. You're out there doing it. And to that end, if people want to learn more, Scott, about what you do and where we can find you, where do we go? Where do people learn more about the magic that's not smoke and mirrors?
No, I have a website like, you know, 75% of America, scottsavor.com, SCOTTSAVOR. But I've been very fortunate, and you guys have been very fortunate too. So we're just honored to have a conversation that we really believe in and, you know, peel the onion deeper. And we believe that magical things happen with questions, right? Sometimes the best answer to any question is a better question. And that's what you guys are doing. And we have a ton of respect for the platform you're putting out to the world, and the world needs it. It's big time stuff.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate your authenticity, giving us the opportunity to cut into your Friday night. We could keep this going on. And I see that clock behind you as a reminder that we want to be respectful. And thank you for the gift of what you guys have shared with us today. We can't wait to share these pearls with our listeners so they can get to know a little bit more about what it means to be kick-ass.
I love meeting you both. And thank you both for showing up and for being real and vulnerable. I know our listeners are going to take a lot of great things from this interview. So appreciate you both so much.
Look forward to connecting with you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
No, our pleasure. Honored to be a part. Let's go.
Yeah. We'll look forward to connecting with you guys soon. Have a great night.
Yeah, you
appreciate
too.
It. You
appreciate
too.
It. Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, see you next time.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. If you like the content of this show, you'll love Matthew's newly released book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. To receive a digital mini book of quotes and images from the book, all you have to do is rate this show and leave a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to listen. Then email us a screenshot of your review at podcast@kickasscouplespodcast.com. And we'll get it over to you right away. Until next time, remember, happily ever after doesn't just happen. It's on purpose.